weird and pissed off, whatever it is.
She just goes a little mad sometimes. We all go a little mad sometimes.
Game over, man! Game over!
What an excellent day for an exorcism.
You are invited to an open house where horror will be your host.
Don't fall asleep.
Welcome to the Gavin in the Woods podcast. We are talking about one of the greatest mysteries in aviation history today, and it is not what the deal is with peanuts.
What is the deal with peanuts? No, seriously, what is it? I don't fly a lot.
With airline peanuts?
Yeah.
Isn't that like the big fucking Jerry Seinfeld, what's the deal with airline peanuts?
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, I completely missed that. Ironically flew over my head.
Hey, it's like a comedian in joke worldwide.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
That's why I didn't get it.
Yeah, like if you want to insult someone who does shitty observational comics, comedy, it's just like, yeah, what's to do with airline peanuts?
Okay, there we go. See, who says we're not educating the public?
Exactly. I've let you into our bitchy little world.
You know, and out of all the ways that I've heard one can be indoctrinated into the world of stand-up comedy, bless you for not letting it involve a palm tree, angry masturbation, roofies, what else am I missing? Kanye West. Thank you for skipping all of that.
Yeah, we're getting the worst of the worst coming through Adelaide at the moment on tour. We just had Pantera, that racist cover band.
Oh, allegedly.
They're not allegedly racist, they're fucking racist.
Oh, are they?
Yeah, Philip Anselmo stood on stage at Dimebash and screamed white power while Sieg Heiling. Fuck that guy. I immediately stopped listening to a bunch of bands after that.
Oh, okay. Maybe he just found a new laundry detergent and was really invigorated by that nappy sand clean.
He explained it as they were drinking white wine backstage and it was a joke about that. And then you see the footage and he's literally standing there screaming, white power, while Sieg Heiling. It was fucked up.
Oh, yeah. See, you didn't mention the Sieg Heiling. It's one thing you could be like, oh.
Yeah.
But really, that's how Pantera gets hard before a show, white wine spritzes.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, they were in town the other day. And a lot of my friends went and saw the racist cover band.
Oh,
the Abbott brothers are dead.
Did they wear their sheets?
Their whitest whites.
I wore a toga once in a zombie walk. It was very freeing.
Yeah. So we've had Pantera, the racist cover band, come through.
Yep.
Now we've got Ari Shaffir, the comedian, coming through, who, no problem with his comedy, very funny, but he slipped fucking drugs into Bert Kreischer's drink. I'm not too sure if I want to pay good money to see that dude.
Oh, in a Bill Cosby way?
No, just in a how funny would it be to give my friend hardcore MDMA kind of way.
Oh.
That's not cool.
That's not cool.
I've had my drink spiked twice, both times with methamphetamine.
Mm.
And both times I, well, of course, had a severe misunderstanding of what was happening, but also I became very focused. The noise in my brain quietened significantly.
Oh, my God. Are you one of those people that you see like on those after school specials who was like, it's the only way I could clean the house. I had to do me some math.
Pretty much.
And I'd vacuum for hours.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. But see, you know what? It just shits me. Like, if you've got free drugs, just offer them. There's a lot of people who are happy to take your free drugs.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't have to slip them in people's drink and laugh.
Unless you're at a Klan rally.
Yeah, then you can slip them all some Cyclone B for a very ironic end.
I don't know what that is.
It's the gas they used to kill the Jews in Auschwitz.
Oh, ba-dum-bum.
Yeah.
Okay. I ruined that one.
You did.
Yeah. Woo! Look at me.
We've never claimed to be anything but ignorant.
Like wokeness at a Pantera concert, ruining everything.
It just wouldn't survive. Bacteria on Mars, it'd just melt.
Oh, my God. Well, speaking of, like, bacteria on Mars, have you seen it yet?
Seen what?
The new ads for Alien Romulus.
Oh, yeah.
You know what the best part is?
That Ridley Scott's not directing it?
Oh, my God. Apart from that, yes. When they were showing, like, you know, the names of who, you know, like, directed by, written by, I was, like, watching every name. Just like, don't let it be Ridley. Don't let it be Ridley. And when I was just about to orgasm because I'm like, oh, my God, we're making it out of here without Ridley. Fucking last one. Produced by Ridley Scott.
He produced it. He didn't direct it.
You know what? I think that was literally like he wouldn't get off the set and they were trying to chase him off with a broom and they were just like, oh, for God's sake, just give him the producer credit. Just if it's the only way to get him off the set.
Yeah. It's directed by Fede Alvarez, who he made the remake of Evil Dead. He also did Don't Breathe. So the remake of Evil Dead, as a standalone film, if you didn't know about the original, would just be a run-of-the-mill.
Yeah, I was not that big a fan of it.
Yeah, so just a run-of-the-mill kind of slasher horror film. Nothing terribly special about it, but I've got a feeling that that was a lot of studio intervention.
Yeah.
Don't Breathe, great movie.
Yeah.
That was really good. So, look, he's a decent choice. He's not nearly as good as Neil Blomkamp would have been.
Oh, my God. Oh, talking about orgasming. Oh, talk about Neil Blomkamp and his Aliens ideas again. Oh.
Well, yeah, it was a direct follow-on from Aliens.
Oh! Keep talking!
Don't come in my house.
I'm almost there. Keep talking!
Jesus Christ. I've heard people say this. You're never almost there.
Oh, my God. Don't talk about Michael Biehn was coming back.
Michael Biehn was going to be in it.
Oh, my God.
What's her name? Sigourney Weaver. I have brain problems.
Oh,
I grew up next to a lead smelter.
You know what my face, and even he did artwork for it. It looked amazing. Michael Biehn, he had the the scarred up face from the acid. Oh my God, my favorite, because like everyone in the world wanted this to happen except fucking Ridley Scott.
Yeah.
My favorite bit was when they were like, before they could even ask Michael Biehn and Sigourney Weaver if they would do it, the first person to be like, oh my God, I'm so in, was Bill Paxton.
Yeah.
Who, of course, dies in Aliens.
Yeah.
And Aliens Colonial Marines, if you played the game. But, yeah, I love the fact he was the first one to be like, no, you don't actually see me die. I'm sure I just climbed up through a tunnel.
Just retcon it. Doesn't matter.
Oh, I was so excited. Yeah, that's the Aliens we wanted.
We need to do a whole episode on how Hollywood has fucked us out of some of the best sci-fi of all time.
Oh, my God, yes. I'm there for it.
Neil Blomkamp's Alien, Neil Blomkamp's RoboCop.
Oh, yes.
Unashamed fan of Neil Blomkamp. If you could put him and fucking Nicolas Cage together in a movie, I think civilization would end because we'd all come too hard.
You know what? You know what shits me off? Is that like it seems like they're just giving anyone who's ever walked past the studio, like a director, like come in, just direct like a classic. Just fucking anyone and their grandma and their auntie and all their fucking nepo babies. Someone like Blomkamp.
Yeah.
Because I can never say his name.
Yeah.
He's all there like, oh, my God, proved himself.
Yeah.
Genius.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Has not made a bad film.
All the mad skills is like, come on. And they're like, oh, we don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe.
By the way, anyone listening to this who's just like yelling, Chappie, Chappie's a bad film, you're fucking wrong. Chappie is genius. That is such a good film.
That's the hill you're going to die on?
That's the hill I'm going to die on. That's my hamburger hill.
Excellent, excellent. Okay. Look, I still hold out hope that once we become billionaires.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. One of my, pet projects.
Your cat film.
What? I'm going to do that one, obviously. Yeah. And then there's the one with Jason Momoa where it's in the zombie apocalypse and we can find out the only way that you can be cured from a bite is from the select saliva that is produced from me and Jason Momoa pashing.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. The science.
Yeah.
One of my other pet projects is I want to make the movie about Hadley's Hope.
Hadley's Hope?
Hadley's Hope. Basically, it's so in Aliens, that's Hadley's Hope,
the settlement. Of course, yeah.
So basically, you know, you see they go out, they get the egg. Ah!
Yeah.
And next thing you know, you show up, everyone's dead. They talk about it must have been a legendary fight. It clearly wasn't.
They were just settlers.
I know. That's why it would be so good.
Yeah.
Because fuck. Because I was thinking about it. I was in my house and I was like, okay, what would I do? Because you know, if a zombie comes in, I know what to do. A vampire comes in, I know what to do. I got this shit sorted.
Yeah.
I was actually thinking about if a xenomorph popped its head out of my crawl space.
Yeah.
And I don't get this often. I actually had that moment where I was like, oh, nah, I'm fucked. What do you do with that?
Yeah, nothing.
Ah!
Nothing, unless you've got a pulse rifle.
Yeah.
You're fucked.
Yeah.
Or even a flamethrower.
Fucked.
Yeah.
Yeah. So scary.
It is a bit scary.
Yeah, to be honest, you know what upsets me the most about aliens?
What's that?
Why did nobody save the hamsters?
The hamsters? The hamsters. In the lab?
Yes. The ones that they're alive. Remember, they're like, we've got the, and like Hudson and Vasquez go in and there's those poor little hamsters. They're the last survivors of Hadley's Hope.
You want to make a film that focuses on the fucking hamsters?
I'm not saying I'm focusing on that. This is a completely side point. I'm just saying, even to this day, it upsets me. I'm like, why did no one save the hamsters?
This idea is like that early draft of the Queen biopic where they're like, and then we keep on going as a band after Freddie dies. And you're like, the story ends.
Literally, you're in the army. You've got all those pockets. Literally just put one in one pocket, put in another pocket. Or even just set them free. Don't leave them in the maze.
Okay.
I'm just saying. Just don't be a dick about it. Set the hamsters free. Justice for the hamsters of Hadley's Hope.
I am never sitting on a plane next to you, because if it goes down and you try and get your fucking overhead luggage, that is the galactic version of overhead luggage in an emergency. Fuck off.
No.
You're getting tasered and dragged out by your hair.
No, because now in Australia, there's certain flights you're allowed to take your pets on board. So I will literally be running around picking up everybody's pets and then locking all of us in together in the toilet, like blowing up all the life rafts.
You're getting tasered and zip tied because you're blocking the exits while you try and save someone's fucking Pomeranian.
Yes. And?
Yeah.
It's like me on the Titanic. I would have been ninja kicking people out of the face. They're putting tape over your mouth.
They're doing it all.
I would have saved that French bulldog.
Why?
I would have kicked all these stupid women and kids out of the way. He got that mastiff and that French bulldog on.
You would have saved a dog that shouldn't be alive anyway.
Oh, it's not their fault.
Yeah, well.
It has hopes. It has dreams.
Yeah, its hopes and dreams of being able to breathe.
Well, to be honest, there's a lot of people on that ship had that hope and dream.
By the way, if you own a pug or a French bulldog, get in the fucking bin. Just get in the bin with that cannibal's dick.
Oh my God. On a side note, you know we always talk about merchandise?
Yes.
I'm going to talk to you later. I've come up with some brilliant merchandise that we should sell.
Like all the other brilliant merchandise that we should sell.
Only because I got really excited and I bought one of those, like, you know, you burn into wood.
Right. Things. Yeah. Okay. You bought like a branding iron.
No, but you.
It's like a hot pen.
Yes.
Yeah.
We should make Almond Muse themed kitchen chopping blocks.
What?
Yes. Because I was like, oh my God, I got this chopping board. And I'm just like, I just started. I'm like, I got to practice my cursive. I'm just going to put. Don't burn the dick / Almond Muse.
Oh, dear.
Copyright. Who wouldn't want that for their kitchen?
Who's
going
to steal your idea? No one is stealing your idea for a cannibal-themed range of housewares.
I think that is brilliant. Copyright. Now today on, what's today, 21st of the March 2024. Right here, right now.
Okay.
It's going to take the world by storm.
Yeah. Yeah. Right now there's someone with a branding iron lawyering up so that they can make cannibal-themed chopping boards.
I'm going to start like a cooking show. It's just called Don't Burn the Dick.
Okay. Okay. Jesus Christ.
What? But then the irony, because I'm vegan, it's nothing but vegan dick.
What's vegan dick?
Well, it's like soy. Maybe some like, no, not the dicks of vegans.
Right.
Oh, you've lost the plot.
Yeah, me.
Yeah.
You're the one that's fashioning a penis out of soy. It's been a while, but.
Like you've never. Oh my God. You know what's so funny?
What's funny?
Speaking of losing the plot.
Yeah.
Okay, just drifting aimlessly. That totally brings us. Would you believe, to the topic of this week?
Thank God.
This week we are going to look at one, and to this day, one of the greatest aeronautical mysteries.
Yes.
one of the greatest who, what, where, why, what, done it of the air.
I first heard about this mystery, and I only found out about this like a few minutes before we started recording that we were doing this. Mm-hmm. But I first read about this mystery in, I think, about grade 5 at school.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate to admit it on the air, so to speak, but I stole the book from the school library because I fucking love that book so much.
Oh, my God. I did that with a book about cats.
Of course you fucking did. Of course you did.
I did go back 30 years and buy, like, the library. Yeah. I donated a cat book.
Oh, that's good.
Oh.
Yeah.
I've still kept the original cat book.
I just relieved a Catholic school of its only book on witchcraft and mysteries.
Score. Hey, you know what? You probably saved some poor lady's life.
Probably.
You know? Oh, my God. Okay, well, hang on. Let me open this. Let me scull this while I open that. Make some chatter.
You can't just tell me to talk like that while you quickly rush through alcohol.
Why not? I pretend I'm getting ready for my Pantera concert. Spritzer, anybody?
That is the right drink for them as well.
Don't you make me come over there.
Well, it's got a Confederate flag on it.
It does not.
Oh, no, that was Rebel Yell.
Yes, thank you. God. You bogan.
Yeah, I remember all the old booze ads on TV for Rebel Yell. Yum.
Jim Beam, sponsor us.
Sponsor you. I haven't had a drink in 11 years.
Give us.
What do I fucking? I'll take their money.
Yeah, I was going to say, wouldn't you wave a flag if they gave us cash? What if they do like a special week alcohol? No, they're not going to do that.
They're not going to do that.
No. Nah. Come on, for 50 grand, would you wave a flag?
Depends what kind of flag.
Like a Jim Beam flag.
Oh, 50 grand for a Jim Beam flag with no right-wing erotica on it, yeah.
Of course there's going to be right-wing erotica. I'm involved. Oh, my Lord. Okay, so let me take another swig. One of the biggest air mysteries.
Yeah.
They didn't lose one plane.
No.
They didn't lose two planes. Not even three planes. Not even four planes. You think I'm going to say they lost five planes?
Yes.
No. They lost six planes.
An entire squadron.
Well, they lost an entire squadron and the rescue plane that went to find them.
I didn't know about the rescue plane.
Just when you think this mystery can't cut any more men down in their prime, it finds a way. Lakme the Shiner.
Oh. Cuts men down?
Emotionally.
Okay. Are the Winchester twins going to come and find you and stab your vagina?
Hello. Oh, my God, my vagina needs to be cleansed.
Ugh.
As this week we take a look at Flight 19, the Lost Patrol.
Yes.
And I only realize now that I didn't sit to write any puns about it because I was oh, my God, like you have not seen the amount of paperwork.
There's a lot of paperwork there. It looks like you're applying for citizenship.
There are so many conspiracy theories and, you know, records and then people are like, oh, but here are these records that weren't included in the official record. Oh, my God. Okay, so Flight 19, the Lost Patrol or the Flight to Fear.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Did it happen in the Bermuda Triangle?
Yes.
So you could do the Beach Boys, Kokomo, and like Aruba, Jamaica.
Ooh,
I'm going to take you to Bermuda and
Atlantis.
Lose you. I don't know.
When this mystery is over, 27 men and 6 planes, even to this day, lost without a trace.
It's like Taylor Swift's record.
One of her whole middle albums.
Went through 27 men and 6 planes.
Oh, my God, it really is Taylor Swift.
It's really Taylor Swift.
Oh my God, stop it. You're going to be triggering angry white men.
I know. In about 4 weeks, Lou's going to come and slap me and just like, what was that for? Making fun of Taylor.
Oh. Now, this area. Now, at this time, it wasn't known as the Bermuda Triangle.
No.
This would actually come later as people were talking about this and other instances.
Yeah.
But looking back, this is sort of really seen as the key incident that would later be sort of used to, I guess, enable the whole idea of the Bermuda Triangle.
Yeah.
Like this is their, like, this is their Prince William.
Yeah.
Hold it up to the sky.
This is the Black Sabbath Volume 1. This changes everything.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But the thing is,
yeah,
technically,
mm-hmm.
this wasn't the first time strange or mysterious things had been recorded in that area.
Really?
Stories. I want to say stories. Official recorded stories actually go all the way back to the 15th century.
Oh.
To Christopher Columbus.
Oh.
Excuse me. Who saw a giant flame in the sky emerge from the ocean.
Okay.
So not plummet into the ocean, emerge from the ocean and then move up and down. And then the light disappeared.
Okay.
This was so curious, obviously. This is not something that happens all the time.
No.
It wasn't just Columbus who... You could be like, you know what? If it was just Columbus, I'm not going to believe it. He's a bit of a prick.
Yeah.
But actually, Columbus and two of his sailors actually recorded it in their journals.
Right.
In a giant, what the fuck was that?
Yeah.
We don't even know. They just stood around and hugged each other for a while.
I was drinking seawater and the next thing I know.
Yeah. What? I did not think you were going to say water at the end of that.
Sea man.
Hey, oh, my God, we're all out of lemons.
Oh, Jesus. We're not out of pineapples, though.
Yeah. Now, on this night, 5 U.S. Navy Avenger airplanes yeah. left the Fort Lauderdale Naval Air Station on a routine, what was supposed to be a routine training mission over the Bahamas.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Now, this was actually the fifth time this maneuver had been, well, it was going to be the fifth time this maneuver had happened in the day.
Yes.
So basically, there were four squadrons before and they all did the same maneuver.
All did the same thing.
Yeah. What they were doing was navigation problem number one.
Navigation problem number one.
That's what it's called. Navigation problem number one, which basically is to test your dead reckoning skills.
Right. Now, for people that don't know, the Grumman TBF Avenger, really cool plane, single engine thing, real World War II kind of era, but very, very capable war machine.
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking about a shitty plane here.
Yeah.
Yeah. These were state-of-the-art technology for the time.
Yeah. And again, and you're doing like training, you need something that's reliable and something that's not easy to fuck up.
Yeah. And these things, they were retired in 1960. So pretty cool things. And they were made by Grumman, the same people that made the Tomcat.
Oh.
From Top Gun. So good planes.
Good plane. Good plane.
Yeah.
So basically, navigation problem number one. It's much sexier when you call it dead reckoning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what Hollywood called it. The script came in and just said navigation problem number one. It'll reveal itself. We're calling it dead reckoning. Fuck.
Yes. Oh, women coming. Ah. So basically what this is the dead reckoning is it's for you to test, okay, you know what, my clock, my compass, has everything got out? You've got to use your math skills.
Wow.
To figure out where you are. Okay. And basically fly with, okay, so if I know like the wind speed is at like 4.7 and I'm going to be traveling this way, if I take 27 minutes, I should be able to cover a certain amount of distance and that should get me to my location.
Yeah. Essentially, it's exactly what you see in the movie Dunkirk.
Oh, I haven't seen it.
Yes. Okay. Well, in the movie Dunkirk, you've got Tom Hardy's character who is a Spitfire pilot.
Oh, Tom Hardy. Oh, yeah. He could Spitfire my
warplane.
Would.
Yes, he would. Yeah, he'd take on your Luftwaffe. Anyway, like he gets shot and he loses a gauge,
mm-hmm.
and he has to start doing maths in his head to see how much fuel he's got left. And he sits there calculating how far he is from England and all those sorts of stuff. And he like does maths with a bit of chalk.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about.
Yeah, pretty much. Just like, oh, when everything breaks, fuck, what do I do?
Yeah. This is the reason I'm not a pilot.
Yes, because fuck math.
Fuck maths.
Now, the five pilots with nine crewmen were led by instructor Lieutenant Charles Taylor.
Yeah.
Now, with this mission, what they would do, as well as practice their dead reckoning, they were to go out, they would practice bombing. So they had their little fake bombs.
Yep.
And they would do low-level dropping their bombs onto these little uninhabited isles.
Yeah.
Pew, 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 pew. So they would practice dropping their bombs, then they would turn north and practice, this is where the dead reckoning comes in, and practice their mapping and journey southwest to home.
Yeah.
The entire flight should have lasted 3 hours.
Yeah.
Including the bombing run. So it's very simple. Go out, come back.
Yeah.
Now, prior to all the flight, all planes are checked over. All were noted to be working.
Yep.
All survival gear was intact and all fuel tanks were full to the brim.
Yes.
But none of the planes had clocks.
No, none of them had clocks.
No.
They all wore watches?
This was noted.
Right.
But again, yeah, they were, oh, they'll have watches, we're sure.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it. But these were not inexperienced pilots. Excuse me. Four of the planes each had a naval aviator in it, mm-hmm. who was undergoing advanced training.
Right.
So dead reckoning is not something that you do on your first day in.
No.
And they were manned, with one exception, by air crewmen.
Yep.
Undergoing advanced combat air crew training as well.
Right.
They all had around 300 hours in the air in training.
That's a lot of flight time.
It's a lot of flight time. So around 60 hours in this particular type of craft.
Yep.
So it's not the first time they've been in the plane. So four of them were doing their advanced teaching. This was literally the last part of their testing.
Right.
So it's like, you know, when you go to like a hairdresser who's done their, they've done everything, but they've got to do a certain amount of haircuts before they're allowed to graduate.
Yeah.
It's this kind of thing. It's a final exam.
Okay. That's a strange analogy, but okay. Hairdresser, pilot, sure.
Same thing. They had all completed most of their trips within the area.
Yep.
So they'd flown over this area before. They were joined in the air by a fifth plane, which was piloted by a veteran combat pilot who had over 2,500 hours of in the air time.
Okay.
So not his first rodeo.
No.
This gentleman was Charles Taylor. He had received his wings at the Naval Air Station in April of 1942 at 23 years old.
So he would have seen some shit.
Mm-hmm. He completed his training in less than a year after enlisting in the Navy. For the next 6 months following his graduation, he served as an instructor of intermediate flying, then in 1943 began flying anti-submarine patrols over the Caribbean Sea.
Yep.
Fucking hell. He then served in the Pacific Theater, flying numerous bombing missions.
Yep.
Excuse me. And did multiple combat tours in the Pacific.
Yep.
So this is not his first rodeo.
No, that is dangerous shit. You need to be able to fly.
He has flown through some shit.
Yep.
He returned to the US in 1945 and was stationed in Florida as a torpedo combat training instructor over the Caribbean and the Gulf of Mexico.
Okay.
Now, on December the 5th, 1945, this run was scheduled to leave at 1:45. And if you know anything about planes, they like to keep to their schedule.
They do.
Now, what the normal practice is, everyone arrives, they go over their flight plans, everyone has plenty of time, any questions?
Yep.
But with this, less than an hour before they were due to take off, Instructor Taylor was nowhere to be seen. Hadn't even shown up at base.
Okay.
He arrived at 1:10 p.m., which is only 35 minutes before they were scheduled to be in the air.
Righto.
Which was extremely unusual.
Okay.
However, he doesn't go in and rush straight to the ready room where they would have the flight briefing, which should have started some time ago.
Yeah.
Instead, he went for flight operations. There he quietly pulled his friend, Lieutenant Howard Williams, aside and asks his friend to do him a favour and lead the flight in his place.
Okay, yep. That's a good sign.
It's always a good sign when your instructor is like, I don't want to fly today. Williams says no.
Yeah, fair enough.
He asks why Taylor doesn't want to fly the mission. Taylor simply responds that he had a bad feeling about flying today.
Okay. What a fucked thing to do to your friend. Everyone's going to die. Can you go in my place?
What? He didn't say it. It was just he had a bad feeling.
But that's still a shit thing to do to someone. I've got a really bad feeling about this. Would you like to do it?
Yeah, I wouldn't go to my friend. I'd go to fucking Karen from accounts, who's a complete cock end.
Yeah.
And be like, hey, you know you always wanted to take a squat up? Pa-pow. Today's your day, bitch. So after his friend is like, nah, fuck off. Not doing it. I'm not covering it for you. Taylor goes to the ready room where the rest of the squad is waiting for him so they can go over the flight's briefing. Instead of going into the flight briefing, Taylor pulls aside Arthur Curtison in the briefing room and formally requests to be relieved from flying Flight 19. This is a huge thing for a pilot to ask to be formally stood down from a flight.
Yeah.
Now, see, this is back in like 1945, this was back when men didn't have feelings and emotions.
No, and if they ever felt anything, they had to immediately transmit it to their wife via fist.
You know, exactly. Or like launch yourself at some Germans immediately.
Yeah.
So, and the regulations said that if there was a valid reason, a pilot can ground themselves if they feel that they are unwell or physically not up to the flight.
Yeah.
But according to those in charge, having a bad feeling doesn't count.
Okay.
See, this is why mental health is so important.
Yeah.
If you have a man who has spent years in combat comes to you and insisting with multiple people pleading to not have to go in the sky, let him have a mental health day.
Yeah, Menti B day.
Yeah.
Get a blanket, get him beer or a coffee.
Give him a hug, send him home to have a lay down under a doona.
Yeah.
You know, that's what you should do.
Yeah.
Or if it's 1945, you slap a leather jacket on him and you send him up to the sky to fight Jerry. The other thing is the instructor basically, not only is this the last exercise of the day, but this is literally the last exercise that all of these men have to do for their qualifications to be over.
Yeah.
So once this is done, they can tick the last box. They don't have to do anything more. They can all say, graduated. Everybody gets off to Christmas.
Yeah.
This is the last thing before Christmas. The weather was actually predicting that intense rain and weather would be moving in after this evening. So if they didn't go up this afternoon, it was going to be at least a week before they could get up in the sky. They just wanted to get them through the exercise as quick as possible. So he tells Taylor his request is denied. He is flying today, period.
Yep.
At 2:10 p.m., so already it's leaving like 25 minutes late, the planes line up on the runway and the five planes depart. Now, there is approximately 3.5 hours until nighttime.
Yep.
But that should be plenty of time to do the exercise.
Yeah.
A couple on a nearby beach would see the planes fly out of the airport and out across the ocean. Ah. They would prove to be the last people to ever see Flight 19 again.
Ah.
Excuse me. So off they went, and at first everything went according to schedule. At around 2:30, a nearby tower hears the report from one of the crew saying, "I've got one more bomb." And hears another voice say, "Go ahead and drop it."
Okay.
Which is a normal conversation for the bombing part.
Yeah, for the bombing part.
Of the run.
Go ahead and drop. Treat yourself.
Treat yourself.
Yeah.
Now, at this time, according to like when they, you know, they've left and everything, okay, at this scene, it feels like everything is on schedule.
Yeah.
Okay. Everything's going ahead as it should. Now, once they finish the bombing run, they should then turn, go east for another 76 miles.
Mm-hmm.
There they will come across a small island, and dead reckoning is kicking in here. So once you've hit that island, you set the clock for 27 minutes. And then, you know, you turn, you do your math. Okay, we've got to do this. If we fly here, we'll be here. And then we turn.
Yeah.
Now, at this stage, there were no visibility issues. And this has come from, like, the chatter and the conversations that was recorded over the air.
Yeah.
They report that they could see for miles. But then they notice... the report that all they can see for miles and miles is open ocean.
Yeah.
No landmass whatsoever.
Oh, dear.
And this is incorrect. They should be able to be seeing small landmasses.
Okay.
At this point, Taylor expresses concerns that his compass is broken. So directs the group to go north and fly at a higher altitude so they can get a better view and hopefully see the islands.
That seems pretty smart.
Except the visibility gets worse at the higher altitude because of an oncoming storm.
Oh, no.
Now, the other thing is at this stage, a lot of their weather reports, they'd be like, oh, yes, it's going to be a clear, sunny day.
Yeah.
They would be using the reports that they had taken in the morning.
Yeah.
And then obviously by the afternoon, especially down near the Florida Keys, where the weather can literally change on a dime.
Yeah.
So a huge giant storm started a brewing.
Oh, dear.
Taylor feels, again, this is from overheard conversation, expresses that he feels that they've overshot the islands. Now, just remember, this flight is literally should just be, there should just be like two turns.
Yeah.
It's a triangle.
Yeah.
You fly a triangle and you come back. It should be the simplest. Apart from all the math, it's regarded one of the simplest exercises to do.
Okay. I would fuck it up. Any pilots listening, I would fuck this up.
Yeah. Well, you just go in a triangle this way, that way.
Yeah.
You can figure out a triangle.
Could I?
Could you? Fair point.
I think you're underplaying the value of Pythagoras here. Could I figure out a triangle? Fucking no.
Come on. Up, down.
Fair enough.
We go. Taylor feels they've overshot the islands, so he orders the crew to turn around and go back the way they came.
Oh, no.
Taylor asks the others what their compasses say, and none of theirs match what his compass is saying.
Oh, no.
Although, then you got to be honest, well, whose compass is broken?
Well, surely with like five different compasses, you'd go with the average, wouldn't you?
Both, he had a gyro compass and a magnetic compass on his plane,
right,
and neither of them were functioning correctly.
Fuck's sake.
But again, as we would go on to find out, the Bermuda Triangle is known. There is an area where basically your compass does that little woo, 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 woo thing.
Well, that's how we have Australia's richest woman.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
No.
Lang Hancock, the father of Gina Rinehart, Fortescue Metals.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that's a different company. So Lang Hancock Prospecting, whatever the fuck it's called.
Yeah.
So he was a station owner.
Yeah.
Who had a huge, huge tract of land out in the Pilbara.
Mm.
And he flew his plane over it, which he would use to muster cattle.
Yeah.
And his compass went bananas. And he was like, hey, iron ore.
Really?
That's literally how they found the iron ore.
Why don't we get a helicopter and start flying over shit?
Well, you've got
to like billionaires.
You've got to own most of fucking Western Australia first.
Oh, fucking you and your rules and restrictions, whatever.
Yeah. This is the same guy that wanted to poison Aboriginal people and build a bigger port at Port Hedland by using an atomic bomb.
Mm.
Yeah, you're fucking crazy, man.
Bit of a dick.
Yeah, massive dick.
Bit of a dick. I'm not even going to put the word allegedly in front of that.
No, just he's dead. You can say it. He's a fucking cock.
So his compass is not functioning correctly, obviously. One of the other pilots is heard saying over the channel, "I don't know where we are."
Right.
Okay. Which is always calming.
Yeah.
Eventually, Taylor looks down and manages to see a bunch of small reefs and believes he is somehow over the Florida Keys.
Right.
Now, this is why I've got my many bits of papers to show you. Okay. So if maybe you can explain this to your, like, to your listeners. Okay. So on this map, sorry, I meant to blow it up.
That's okay.
This is where they depart.
Yep.
Now they're supposed to basically just fly in this straight line, drop your bombs over here, fly up here to the second bit of your triangle, and then fly back over here.
Okay.
So this is where they are, here, the Bahamas. The Florida Keys are all the way down there.
Right.
So how would you describe that geographically?
Well, geographically, they are completely bumfuck the wrong direction. And look, if you think you've fucked the navigation up that badly, and I can see why he might have thought that, because, I mean, the picture I'm looking at, you basically leave from the east of that peninsula, fly east, then you're supposed to turn north and then turn west and come back to the base.
Yeah.
If you fuck that second turn and you've missed the land, yeah, you may have flown too far south and you might be seeing the Florida Keys.
Yeah.
That seems like a logical.
But basically it means like, but at that turn, instead of basically turning and then going right, you've turned and gone left.
Yeah.
Just completely, or not even like left, west.
Yeah, west. So it seems to me like the thing to have done here would have been to fly slightly west-northwest and you eventually would have hit land.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I don't know.
Now, there are other problems with this message.
Right.
The first of which is Taylor got his call sign wrong.
Okay.
He identified himself with the call sign MT-28, but his actual call sign was FT. 28.
Right.
Later when prompted, he did correct this.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I know that's not a huge thing, but this is all the little things.
I mean, this poor fucker, he's having a breakdown.
It might be showing exactly. This is all part of like a bigger picture.
Yeah, poor fuck.
Meanwhile, a Lieutenant Cox.
Hey. Shouldn't he be in the Navy?
Here comes my hero. Oh, Cox seaman to the rescue.
Oh.
Lieutenant Cox, who is in another plane in the sky, reaches out to him. And not literally. This is not like a Fast and the Furious 10 moment where
they're high-fiving in midair. No.
It's not. You're not asking your... I watched like the Fast and the Furious 10 the other bit.
How are you single?
Have you seen it?
Of course not.
Oh, my God. There's a bit where he's like – it's like – you know how they use that bit where it's like, oh, okay, like, you know, I used to take him out, like, you know, like fishing. So it was like the mummy. So like, oh, he knows that, like, you know, to build a little sand castle of like some – you know, such and such statue. So when we find it, oh, we know we've got to go to Hamunaptra, you know, that kind of thing.
Right, yeah.
But if the mummy was in the Fast and the Furious universe, you would have your setup scene where you are teaching your, I don't know how old kids are. I don't know. You are teaching your 7-year-old how to do burnouts in a Woolies car park.
So this is very Port Pirie, I relate.
Go yes. On. Yep. So that's what Vin Diesel is about, teaching his like 7-year-old to, you know, you got to understand the feel of the car and the flow of the car.
Yeah.
2.5 hours later, we cut to the scene where the child then channels that memory of doing donuts in right. the Woolworths car park
yeah.
to like open a door and throw himself from a vehicle doing like 200 Ks an hour to leap from Jason Momoa's car into Vin Diesel's car while they're spinning because he uses the flow of the donut to catapult. And the thing is, like, Vin Diesel's like, yeah, use the force of the donut to like his 7. They're communicating telepathically, obviously, okay. through okay. the power of the donut. And so then his child is just like, yes, to the universe, whoa! And just like hurtles himself from the car into.
Tragically enough, I think I need to watch this. Okay, yeah. So not that's reaching out like that.
You know, the worst thing is that's not even the most ridiculous moment. Sorry, spoiler alert. After he catapults himself into the car, they then drive like vertically down a dam that's exploding and the car's on fire.
Okay, I actually need to watch this. Okay.
They're right. Protected only by the power of the donut. Yeah.
Okay, so not like that. He's picking up his radio and reaching out to him.
It would have been so much more better if Vin Diesel was here.
Yeah.
To just, ah, oh, they all could have just leapt into his cockpit. I'd still jump into his cockpit.
Go on.
Lieutenant Cox, who was in another plane in the sky, reaches out to Taylor.
Yeah.
Taylor is saying that he is over the keys but doesn't know how to get back to Fort Lauderdale.
Right.
Again, which if we look at our map. So if you're in the floor of Florida Keys, yeah. it's literally down here.
You're south of the Cape.
Yeah. So it should just be a case of if you just fly straight up, you're going to go straight back.
Yeah, north. Yeah.
Like, yeah. Just head north, mate. It's literally, it's directly below yeah. it. So he can't figure out how he doesn't know how to get back to Fort Lauderdale from the Florida Keys.
Right.
And so Lieutenant Cox basically says to him, well, look, the sun's out. So it's literally just a straight flight up back to Fort Lauderdale. Yeah. Like, it's simple. So basically, look, the sun's out. You keep that on your left.
Yeah, because it sets in the west.
And you'll get home, mate.
Yeah.
Just literally just keep going. This is the next part of their conversation. This is actually from the recorded. Cox, what is your present altitude? I will fly south and meet you. Taylor, I know where I am now. I'm at 2,300 feet. Don't come after me.
Oh, no. Those were his words. I know where I am now. I'm at 2,300 feet. Don't come after me.
Yeah.
Oh, the poor dude.
Literally.
Yeah.
Don't come after me. Lieutenant Cox ain't having none of that.
Yeah.
He says that he is dropping to the same altitude they are flying at and will head towards the Florida Keys, so they should meet up in the middle and then he can direct him and the squadron back to Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah.
Although I do find it a bit curious where he's like, oh, tell me the exact feet that you're flying at and I will fly at that feet.
Yeah.
Shouldn't you fly to be 10 feet above that? What if there's a cloud and you literally just like kiss noses in the middle? Mwah!
I don't know.
Isn't that how aviation works?
Maybe because the sun's getting lower, it's harder to spot. I don't know.
Yeah, but no. I always thought the whole thing of like that's when the beep, 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 because it's on the same altitude as you.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
But don't come after me. Now, the thing is, Taylor should be able to identify the Florida Keys, Because at one stage, he was actually stationed in Miami.
Right.
And he spent over 6 months flying over the Florida Keys.
Yeah.
So there were people who were like, well, he should know what the Florida Keys look like, and he should know if he's over the Florida Keys. He's just spent the last 6 months flying over the Florida Keys. Minutes later, Taylor messaged again. We have just passed over a small island. We have no other land in sight.
Oh, dear.
Which, the whole thing about the Florida Keys is it's a whole collection.
It's a massive archipelago, yeah.
Yeah, like just little islands. So maybe you're not over the Florida Keys.
Yeah, okay.
But Cox keeps going. And at approximately 45 minutes later, Cox is now flying over the Florida Keys because he flew down to it. And there is no sign of Taylor or any other planes in the sky. In fact, the radio signal for Taylor is getting fainter and fainter.
Right.
Which means that Cox and Taylor are literally flying further and further away from each other.
Yep.
Which is not good.
No.
Excuse me. At approximately 3:45 p.m., Fort Lauderdale's flight tower received a message from Taylor, who reportedly sounded confused and worried.
Okay.
They think at this stage, this is the moment he starts sounding confused and worried.
Yeah.
I think it probably started 2 hours ago where he was like, please God, don't make me go up in that plane.
Yeah, that's a good time to start worrying.
Mm-hmm. The tower, Taylor said, cannot see land. We seem to be off course. The tower responded, what is your position? To which there were a few moments of silence. The tower personnel peered out into the clear sky in every direction, but there were no planes to be seen. One of the other crewmen responded, we cannot be sure where we are. Repeat, cannot see land.
Oh, man.
The tower requested that Taylor switch his frequency from, oh, God, I'm going to say this wrong, I know there's a way I'm supposed to say this, but I'm talking about hertz.
Yeah.
How do you, like 4805?
Just like 4800 megahertz or whatever it is. I don't know. Just a number.
Okay. From 4805 hertz, but they didn't receive any response. Later, they requested Taylor switch to 3000 hertz to the search and rescue frequency.
Right.
So everyone who's in search and rescue can now communicate with you if you drop onto that search and rescue facility.
Yeah.
To which Taylor refused.
Okay.
Saying, I cannot switch frequencies. I must keep my planes intact.
Oh, he's lost it.
At 4:30 p.m., the tower hears the team discussing their situation. The go-to, the protocol in this scenario is that if you ever get lost over the ocean and you genuinely, we are fucked, we have no idea where we're going, the procedure for anyone coming out of Fort Lauderdale, the procedure was to turn your nose towards the sun and just keep flying west until you found the first bit of land.
Yep.
So turn west and just keep going.
Yep.
Taylor couldn't figure out what was going on.
Okay.
They had been heading north for over an hour.
Oh, man.
So, again, he thought they were just, you know, like a few minutes below, like Florida.
Yeah.
So it's taken an hour, and now there is nothing. Oh. Not even that one little island they flew over. Taylor thinks they are flying parallel to the coast just west of Florida. So if they turn west They will be flying to Mexico and will crash in the ocean before they reach land. So this is where they're supposed to be, basically on the east side of America.
Yeah.
But he's convinced that they've come down there beneath America.
Yeah.
You know, under the Florida Keys. And if he goes west, he's not going to get to Florida. He's going to, like, crash on the way to Mexico.
Yeah.
So even though everyone's like, dude, how are you over for, like, the Florida Keys? That's completely nowhere near. He's so got it into his head that, oh, okay, that was the Florida Keys.
Yeah.
Nah, we're just going to keep flying and it's going to be wrong. The radio signal continues to get weaker and weaker.
Oh, no.
Which means Taylor just keeps getting further and further away from the base.
Yeah.
So even though the protocol is to turn west and just go until you hit land, Taylor tells the crew they have to fly east.
Oh, no.
To get back to the Florida Keys from where they have just come.
To the Atlantic, boys. Let's go.
So they turn around again.
Oh, no.
The radio signal continues to get weaker and weaker as they get further and further from base. Now, remember, this was back in the day. There was no, like...
There's no radar.
Yeah, you can't just look at your beep. There's no transponder. You can't say, yeah, you're definitely over there.
No GPS. This is slide rules, maps and compasses.
The radio signal continues to get weaker and weaker, further and further from base. And because they're on the instruction channel...
Yeah.
Some towers can hear snippets of the conversation, but they can't get information to the crew. Another 45 minutes later, the sun is almost completely gone.
No.
And it is now pouring with rain.
Oh, no.
The planes are now starting to run low on petrol. And it sounds, some people claim, like Taylor might now begin to be panicking. The tower hears one of the trainee pilots urging Taylor, telling him that they have to turn around and fly west. They are sure of it.
Yeah.
So this is one of the trainee pilots basically begging him to turn around and fly west. That's the protocol. That's what we're instructed we have to do. We just have to fly west. So you can imagine, I think they all must be panicking at this stage.
Yeah, you'd be shitting bricks at this point.
Yeah. So they're pleading with Taylor that they need to turn around and fly west. Taylor miraculously agrees. And at 5:15 p.m., they turn around and head back west. At 5:50, so 35 minutes later, a station which was set up to detect approaching enemies in the Atlantic Ocean gets a signal and says the planes are in fact not in the Gulf.
Oh, no.
They're not in the Florida Keys. But they estimate they are 120 miles east of Daytona Beach, which is approximately here.
Oh, God.
So how would you describe where they're supposed to be and where they are?
So where they are supposed to be is the bottom of the peninsula down at Fort Lauderdale. They are way off track north in the middle of the Atlantic.
Yeah. So it's kind of like they haven't even done a triangle. They've done a straight line pretty much to the piss end of nowhere.
Yeah.
With some few zigs and zags.
Yeah. So like if you were South Australian, say, and you were trying to fly from Adelaide and out and back, right now you'd find yourself somewhere south of Kangaroo Island.
Yeah.
Basically, you're fucked.
Yeah. But the thing is, if they keep heading west,
yep,
they're eventually going to get back to America. They will actually make it back to land.
They've got enough fuel.
Yes. They can make it back. I mean, obviously, it won't be to Fort Lauderdale.
No.
But it will just be a random bit of America. You're landing on a highway. It doesn't matter.
I'd rather land on a highway than in the ocean.
Woo! We're fucking alive!
Yeah.
So all they've got to do is just keep going west. The trainee pilot was right. They are on their way to salvation. So that's when they detected them at 5:50. Just keep going west, boys. Just keep going west. At 6:04 p.m., about 14 to 15 minutes after they U-turned and started heading west, Taylor tells the pilots they have made the wrong decision and they need to do another U-turn and fly east.
Oh, my God. What is wrong with this dude?
Hey, because that way they are going to get back to the Florida Keys. So this station can hear this, but they can't reach the planes to tell them.
Oh, God.
No, keep going west. The trainee pilots all attempt to argue with Taylor. They don't believe they are in the Gulf of Mexico, and they say their compasses are working and they need to just keep going west. But Taylor insists. Can you imagine listening to this? Just like, just turn around. Taylor insists, and he and all the other pilots. So at one stage, they were like, okay, maybe this is the moment the trainee pilots are going to break off, or maybe even one or two of them might break off and just keep going west. All the other pilots make a U-turn with Taylor and they all head back east. And they fly directly into a storm, thunder and lightning.
This is toxic masculinity, right?
And so this is one of those things where everyone, you know, is saying like, oh my God, like, you know, these guys, they know the area. They know this is not the Florida Keys. You know, yeah. Why did they not trust their instincts, But as I was saying, like, it's, you know, the Navy, the military, it's all the same. It just gets drummed into them.
Yeah.
And my uncle-in-law, he got conscripted to Vietnam.
Yeah.
And when he said that, like, basically when they went into training, the whole first bit of their training, it was just repeated. What, no matter what happens, you just do as you're told.
Yeah.
Because you don't understand the bigger picture. You know, the people above you know more than you know, and there are secret things in play and there's things that you're not a privy to. So no matter what, you just listen, obey, and you go over that fucking...
Yeah. Yeah.
The counter-argument to that, and this is... I'm going to reference one of my favorite all-time films, which is The Dirty Dozen.
Yes.
Fucking love that movie. It gives me a man boner.
Hey, the best kind.
One of the bits is when at the beginning where obviously Lee Marvin is talking to like all of the criminals to be like, oh, what did you do? And usually it's like, oh, pieces of shit. Oh, I killed this person. I killed that person. He comes into one cell and it's Charles Bronson.
Yeah.
He's like, what are you in for besides being a stone cold hottie? And Charles Bronson is like, I killed an officer.
Yeah.
He then goes on to explain, well, the problem was their officer was an idiot.
Yeah.
Was making dumb mistakes. He had already got a whole heap of his men killed and he gave such a ridiculous order. He was about to get everyone killed, including Charles Bronson.
Yeah.
So Charles Bronson shot him.
Yeah.
Saved everyone else in the squadron.
Yeah.
And as Lee Marvin is walking out, he turns to Charles Bronson and he says, you know what? You only made one mistake. You know what that mistake was?
He told someone.
He got caught!
It was more common than you think.
Yeah. Well, because as we know, a lot of like positions, it was bought.
Yeah.
You know.
Especially the British Armed Forces.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. It was just how much money you had, whose uncle you were. No experience, no common sense. You're put in front of, you know what, here's 1,000 Australians.
Yeah.
Try not to kill them all at once.
Yeah, don't kill them on your first day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think this was problem. They should have just been, oh, the Bermuda Triangle. We don't know what happened. He got sucked out of his cockpit. Oh, he didn't trust the donut. At 6:30 p.m., Taylor speaks this message to the unit.
Right.
Which, again, others are hearing as this plays out. This was his message. All planes, close up tight. We'll have to ditch unless landfall. When the first plane drops below 10 gallons, we all go down together.
What?
That was his plan.
Holy shit.
When the first plane goes below 10 gallons, he wanted all planes to just ditch into the ocean.
Yep.
Why?
Yeah, this dude has had a full mental breakdown.
Like, you could argue, oh, okay, well, I guess if all the planes are in the same spot, like we're all together. But if someone's got enough petrol, these planes, them crashing into the ocean, it was not a good result. You knew if you drive one of these into the ocean, you're...
Yeah.
The chances of you surviving are...
They're pretty low.
Yeah. So, you know what? Even if I was running out of petrol, I would want the other people in my squadron to try to save. If you can fucking live, mate,
yeah,
just go.
Yeah.
Just keep fucking going. But that was his command. When the first plane dropped below 10 gallons, we all go down together. Not in the sexy way.
That's still 44 litres of fuel, by the way.
Fucking, you know what? It could be 44, it could only be 43 litres away.
Yeah.
To an island.
Yeah.
An island of big titted ladies.
Oh, big titty island?
Yes.
I've always wanted to go there.
I know.
The coconut shells are not big enough.
It's just 43 miles away.
No.
This lot missed it. Fuck. Oh. So that was his message. We all go down together. And that is the last official message anyone hears from Flight 19.
The message here, take mental health seriously.
However,
oh,
there are claims that this, in fact, was not the last message heard from Flight 19.
Really?
You could argue maybe it was the last transmission heard by that particular tower. It doesn't mean it was the last message heard. According to sources, contact was lost for another 10 minutes. But when it resumed, it was not the voice of the flight leader.
No.
It was not Taylor. The message heard was, "We can't find west. Everything is wrong. We can't be sure of any direction. Everything looks strange. Even the ocean." They report there was another delay. And then the tower personnel. Oh, excuse me. Excuse me. Sorry, that was the wrong moment to get that.
That was.
After radio silence, the new voice could be heard. It was trembling, bordering on hysteria. "We can't tell where we are. Everything is... Can't make out anything. We think we might be about 225 miles northeast of base." For a few moments, the pilot rambles incoherently before he utters the last words ever heard from Flight 19. "It looks like we are entering white water. We're completely lost." Silence.
No.
Now, there's actually, like I said, there are different people who have different reports and different accusations of what happened next, including the death of another 13 men and one man who miraculously survived Flight 19.
Hey.
Oh, But we're going to come back. That is going to be a part two.
There we go.
So we can understand the theories, the stories, what happened.
Cool.
There is one theory that involves Atlantis.
Oh, that's awesome. Man, just when I was talking about toxic masculinity, just give the dude the fucking day off. He's coming to you in code. I got a bad feeling about this, which is war talk for I'm held together by a thread.
Yeah. I am literally, this is my last, like.
Out of fucks.
I don't know how I put my pants on this morning, to be honest. That's what that is.
Yeah.
Mental health, mate.
Yeah.
Admit men have feelings.
Do we ever?
And when you feel them, don't make them feel them in the sky in a plane leading up
with
a man.
With rudimentary navigation equipment.
I'm the first one to admit when I am on my period, I don't want to do math.
No.
Math is not my friend when I am on the rag. Math is not my friend. I don't want to do your calculations.
This is a very strange ad for Tampax right now. Don't make me add. I'm bleeding.
I have too much raid for your subtraction, unless you were talking about me subtracting your life.
Me plus chocolate equals shut the fuck up.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Me in this cramp says, fuck you. Fuck the semen out of you.
No. That's a very sexual threat.
Not in a good way. Not a pivot.
No, only good sexual threats, please.
Calm down, Louis.
I think I was in a band called Sexual Threat.
You probably were.
Well, I had two members in that band that were a sexual threat.
Were sexual threats.
Yeah, fucking great.
But the stories you've heard, anyone you've ever played music with has turned out to be some kind of musical.
Yeah.
I didn't know you were in the backing band for Rolf Harris.
That was like, fucking looked like him.
Oh, my Lord. So, yeah, tune in with us next week and we are going to find out the dirty, their scandal, the story. Could there be cover-ups? Could there be missing transcripts? And has anything ever been found from Flight 19?
There you go.
And what happened to the men who went looking for it?
Oh. See, now we busy ourselves with whether or not the fucking Duchess of York has had her fucking clothes photoshopped.
Yeah. It's just, well, and the other thing is like, bear in mind, like, because we're like, oh my God, like, how do you just lose five planes over the ocean? Remember, we still haven't found that flight from Singapore.
Yeah.
That's out there somewhere. Oh, I don't know. But you know what? Maybe it's up in the air having a good time with a Mothman.
Hey.
Through a Mothman, eat the carpet.
And like toxic masculinity, put the dick in the bin.
In the bin.